The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we've got one of the greatest streaks in sports betting history taking the hardwoods tonight, and why no one even seems to care. Could you actually hear a difference between someone building a barbecue pit in your backyard and a Washington Wizard shooting a basketball? And yeah, we're going to sort through some awfully ugly NBA numbers on the show today, but after that, we're going to sit back, relax, and play a little jazz.
All right, Dave. Tuesday morning, yesterday, MLK Day, lots of NBA. Both of us spent a fair bit of time watching the pros play yesterday. First take, what do you got for a Tuesday?
Well, there was a big focus, of course, on the NBA yesterday because of what we're going to do with postmortem today, talk about these early season NBA numbers. So we wanted to sit down and pay particular attention last night to the Mavericks and the Lakers, like many of you probably also did. That was rough, wasn't it? One of the most ingratiating second halves we've ever seen by good basketball teams. And it reminded me of the first television I ever owned, a black and white set way back in the late 60s. One of these where the hold would always go off. You'd end up getting about two-thirds of the picture. And it looked like if you put that TV and showed that basketball game on it, you would swear that if the legs were cut off of the players, they were actually playing barefoot on gravel. It was that bad to watch. That game almost went into overtime tied at 70-70, which would almost be unheard of. 70-70 should be late third quarter most nights. Two teams combined to go 5-36 from three-point range. But it's not the fact that the shots missed. How many weren't even close? How many air balls in the game? That was just truly ugly to watch. As we move on into the postmortem, we're going to talk specifically about this early season flow and why things like that are happening. Teddy, I know you were grinding away, watching all day again. Your biggest impression off of Monday?
We got to talk about Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics. You know, this is a Celtics team with four wins so far this year. Those four wins come against Detroit, New Jersey, and Washington twice. Absolute bottom feeders. Maybe the three worst teams, certainly in the Eastern Conference, if not in the entire NBA. That's all Boston's been able to do so far this season. Now, Danny Ainge, this is a guy who won an NBA Executive of the Year award, and the Celtics went on to win that title with the players that Ainge acquired. Remember the 131-92 blowout over the Lakers, Game 6 of the NBA Finals back in 2008? Celtics fans remember, I'm sure. They remember some of the key role players from that team, the Eddie House and the Tony Allen, James Posey, P.J. Brown, Leon Poe, Big Baby Davis, all the key guys off the bench that really helped a team that was old even back then get the energy to win a title. And they did. And Ainge may well have deserved the Executive of the Year. He did two steals. You know, his old buddy Kevin McHale from the Celtics. Basically, here's Kevin Garnett. You take him. Similar story with Seattle, who wanted Ray Allen's contract off the books. Worked out for the Sonics, being that they became Oklahoma City, drafted Kevin Durant, and are now competing for championships. And he made those two deals, and they were great deals at the time, and they allowed Boston to be competing for championships over basically a three-year span. But what Ainge hasn't done is replace any of the key role players that I mentioned earlier. And when we look back in history at the Kendrick Perkins for Jeff Green trade that Ainge pulled the trigger on last year at the trading deadline, that may well go down as a historically bad deal for Boston. If you still have Rondo at the point and Perkins at the five, guess what? Maybe you can trade Garnett to a contender or trade Ray Allen where they can come off the bench and build your, and help a championship-caliber team in the postseason. And meanwhile, you have two key players, your point guard and your post player, locked up for the future. But Ainge didn't do that. He got Jeff Green. Jeff Green's not going to be in the league this year, may never play again. Didn't factor into with help Boston win a championship last year. And Ainge, who was routinely mocked as an executive prior to acquiring Garnett and Allen, maybe it's time to mock him as an executive again. Watching this Boston team play as poorly as they have hurts the eyes. Really, I wanted to scratch my eyeballs out last night, Dave, kind of like you did watching that Mavericks-Lakers game.
That was more of a morbid curiosity.
Just a train wreck?
Because you kept thinking, at some point, someone's going to kick into gear. Someone's going to take the game over. Someone's going to play well. Still waiting. Didn't happen yet.
Yeah, Celtics, similar story. But, you know, let's shift over to Money Time. To Market Watch. Money Time, Market Watch. You know, we'll get to Money Time, we promise. But it's time to start with Market Watch. And this is something we were going to talk about, or we considered talking about in Money Time. But it was time to lead off the show with it, really. Because the setting is so historic, we thought it would start right at the very top. Kentucky enters tonight's game against Arkansas on a true streak for the ages. And we talked a little bit about the type of streaks that some college basketball teams can go on while the market's not paying attention. And you know, both Dave and I have a philosophy. Sometimes you want to ride these streaks for a little while. Well, how about this for the Wildcats? They have not covered a point spread in their last 14 line games, 0-13-1 against the spread during that span. And even when we chart the line moves, not many openings that would have turned the push into a W. This team has been a point spread disaster. Now, as it happens, the rest of the country, your average guy, has no idea this streak is going on. There's completely under the radar. No mention of this on the four-letter networks or anything like that. To everyone else, Kentucky's the number two team in the country, 17-1, this juggernaut. To bettors, both here in Las Vegas and elsewhere, Kentucky is a meal ticket, a point spread disaster area that just keeps on giving. Now, it's hard for this to happen. When a team goes on a streak, winning or losing, the odds makers are usually aware that they've been setting bad lines, and they look to adjust, while also trying to keep the streak bettors from riding that streak again and again and maybe parlaying some of those wins to get some big scores. But there's no sign of that. Certainly not tonight. Kentucky once again favored by 16.5 as this show opens. Dave, what gives?
Fact is, nobody seems to care. When we brought this up with a couple of guys who helped set the odds, they weren't even aware that it was up to that, you know, historic 0-14 level because the money hasn't been there. Imagine if the Patriots covered 14 games in a row. The vast amount of money the books would lose. Imagine if a terrible team had an 0-14 run. The problem is Kentucky is very, very good. That's part one. So the books really haven't been stung by this. Part two is the nature of those games. First note that 10 of the 14 did finish within 6 points of the spread. So it's not like the number has been all that far off. Also notice that 10 of those games had lines of 17.5 or higher. So here's the issue. If you got a team out there favored by 4 and they lose the game, you know you made a mistake. But if you got a team favored by 25 and they win by 21, you didn't necessarily make an odds maker's mistake because a lot of times in the high point spread range, it's the coach's intent, not the strength of the team. Say, oh yeah, they could have covered the 25. John Calipari backed off a little bit. We don't need to adjust. So we talked to a few people behind the counter. They said, no, they haven't been hurt by the streak at all. No one's really been betting it because even the savvy bettors see that the power rating on Kentucky really isn't off that much. These games are falling pretty close. It's Calipari not going for the jugular in some of these non-conference games that's led to it. But now, moving forward, what about that streak tonight?
Well, I mean, if the streak does expose anything about Kentucky, it's this. Lack of depth. There's only 7 players on the team that are averaging 10 minutes per game. The bench simply isn't there to overpower teams in the role of a big favorite. And that's how you cover 21 and 25 and 28-point spreads. It's how you cover 18-point spreads and 16-point spreads, for that matter. You need that bench depth to continue piling up points even when the starters are off the floor. Kentucky hasn't had that, obviously. If you drop below the number 8 guy in the rotation, Elroy Vargas, the entire rest of the roster has a grand total of 9 points scored in 18 games.
So what happens tonight? It's going to be interesting to watch both sides of this equation. We get to start watching Mike Anderson now at Arkansas, back running the old 40 minutes of hell the phrase that Nolan Richardson coined back in the 90s. But do you dare do that against Kentucky in Rupp Arena? The one thing Kentucky does awfully well, they attack presses. They go right over the top and attacking the basket. They got four different players that have at least two assists per game. That's pretty rare in modern college basketball. They share the ball awfully well. Anderson has to press the score. That's his problem. You need to get out in the open court because the Kentucky half-court defense, despite that long streak of not covering, is the best half-court defense in all of college basketball, allowing 35.6% shooting so far this year, and already 164 block shots. They're on pace to shatter the Division I record in that category. So could it be that Mike Anderson, playing into the hands of Kentucky, might finally open up that window for Kentucky to get the money? It just might.
We got two great emails right before the show today from John and Sean. We're going to open up the show with those two emails tomorrow in Market Watch, but we want more. Keep those emails coming in. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day, and you can get involved in the community. There's active threads, discussions, forum topics. Chime in, covers.com/posting forum. And, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the Super Bowl party right here in Sin City. All you got to do to come, it's free, free booze, free food, dancing girls, I don't know, the Shadow Bar at Caesars, the Friday night before Super Bowl. Just send an email, party@covers.com. And you can even make your travel reservations right from Covers. You can get great deals, in fact, on hotels and flights. Just go to travel.covers.com.
When we come back, we're going to have to revisit Lakers, Mavericks, and a lot of ugly NBA basketball in the postmortem. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from you should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up even extra sterile today. We've got some really ugly NBA stuff we don't want you to get caught with. Time for the postmortem. We're going to take you deep inside the current NBA season to show you the things that you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
To say that the play in the NBA has been a bit on the ugly side so far this season is something of an understatement. It's been real ugly, especially with just about anything involving the Washington Wizards, which we'll get to in a moment. But the bottom line is that these teams didn't have nearly enough time in those short training camps to find a working rhythm, especially since so many of them didn't have their roster set anyway. Shooting and scoring are down, way down. Last year, 99.6 points per game league-wide on 45.9% shooting, 35.8 from three-point range. This year, scoring's down a full 5 points a game, 94.6 points per game. Shooting's down from 45.9 last year to 44.2% this year. Three-point shooting is down, 35.8 last year, 33.9 so far this season. And the odds makers didn't really anticipate it particularly well. The betting markets haven't done a great job with it either. Through last night, a count of 111 unders to 76 overs. So if you've been blindly betting every single under in the NBA this year, you made a nice profit. Today, we're going to break it down a different way. Is this really a league-wide issue, or are there particular teams dragging the aggregate totals way down?
I'm going to take you all the way across the board so far in this year's NBA season, because now that every team's got at least a dozen games under their belt, the numbers become meaningful. Go to the three key categories that impact scoring: pace, offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency. Naturally, the latter two, you know, sort of co-mingle in there with each other. And we're going to do this a couple of different ways. When we put our charts up, we're going to focus on the top two teams in the league compared to last year, the team in the middle compared to last year, and the bottom two compared to last year. Then we'll see, is somebody exploding at the top to create this? Is somebody weighing it down at the bottom? Where are those real holes in the numbers? So let's take a look. Let's start with pace, first of all. The speed at which these games are being played. Notice the similarities here. At the very top last year, Minnesota, 99.2 possessions per game. Currently, Denver, 98.8. Not all that far off. If you go to the middle, Memphis, 94.5. San Antonio, 94.2. Almost identical. Go to the bottom. Portland, 90.5 last year. This year, Detroit, 89.9. So the story has not been pace. These teams are actually playing at a very comparable flow to what we saw them do last year. That tells us that the scoring problems are coming from somewhere else. So now we have to move forward. Is this bad offense? Is this good defense? Is this a little bit of both? Let's take a look.
Let's start with the offensive efficiency charts based on points per 100 possessions, the standard way to look at the NBA. And once again, we're going to focus on the top two teams, the team in the middle, and the bottom two. Look at the top from last year. Denver, points per 100 possessions, 109.5. In the middle, the Detroit Pistons, 104.6 points per 100 possessions. At the bottom, Milwaukee, 99. Points per 100 possessions. So a differential of 10 and a half from top to bottom. This year, we look at those numbers in 2012, and Orlando is at the top, 106.8 points per 100 possession. In the middle, Boston at 100 points per possession, and at the bottom, the Washington Wizards. Oh yes, those lovely Wizards, 88.3 points per possession. Now things start to make a little bit more sense. There is a drop across the board, no question. But pay attention to the margins. At the top, the drop has been, we saw, 3.7 points per game from the top team last year to the top team this team. It is down. At the middle, 4.6 points per 100 possessions down. So significant. But at the bottom, wow, that number 30 from Milwaukee last year, well, if that number was the Bucks this year, they'd rank number 18. There are a dozen different teams playing worse offensively now than the single worst team in the NBA played last year. Now, that, of course, when we bring up the Wizards at the bottom, 5 points worse than even Detroit. Simply hideous basketball. Just hideous, Dave.
We got four guys here in the studio right now, and we're kind of debating amongst ourselves. If we grabbed the janitor out of the hall and went out there against the Wizards, could we hold them to under 100 points? Which we just might. Unfortunately, one of the guys here in studio is Jacob, which means we could also get a few rebounds, as well. That's how bad they've been. But now again, here's your classical story. Bad offense, good defense. How do we weigh the factors? So now let's go to the defensive tables to do this same comparison. Number one last year, Chicago, 97.4 points per 100 possessions. But number one this year, Philadelphia, 8 full points below where Chicago was. That's very, very significant. Go to the middle. It's significant, but not as big a gap. Atlanta, 104.6 last year. Toronto, 99.8. But now take a look at the bottom. Last year, Toronto allowed 110 points per 100 possessions. New Jersey, just a peanut away from that. That tells us one thing. New Jersey is playing some awfully, awfully bad defense. For all the things that have happened in the league, look at where they are. So whereas there are 12 offensive teams that are worse than the bottom team was last year, on defense it's only 7. Yeah, not quite as wide. So now what do we do with this going forward? We've got to figure what led it to happen in the first place. And part of it is simply the lack of rhythm. That timing, not having training camps, not being in shape, not working together, especially with so many new faces in new places, has the offenses a step behind. Maybe the defenses aren't necessarily better. The offense is just not executing as well. Now, over time, a couple things are supposed to happen. The offenses should get better. With more playing time, more practice, you develop those chemistries. The defenses, by the way, could get worse. Because whereas you're used to having a day off to game plan for your opponents, that's going to be less common as the season goes by. Those defensive game plans won't be there when it's back-to-back and back-to-back-to-back. So the pendulums will start swinging. The question is when, When does that value point come into play? We'll start talking about it a little bit in Money Time tonight.
Coming up next, the news you need to know in our Insider Six Pack.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, let's pop that top on today's Insider Six Pack. Let's start in Foxborough, New England, Foxborough, Massachusetts this weekend as the Patriots take on the Baltimore Ravens. We're going to set the stage, set up some storylines that we need to follow. The good news, all four teams are close to being given clean bills of health. Now, there was naturally some concern for Baltimore when Ed Reed went down, landed awkwardly after breaking up a pass near the end of Sunday's win over the Texans. But it does not look like Reed's injury is serious. This is from head coach John Harbaugh. Quote, "It looks like he's all right with the ankle. Everything's come up okay as far as the x-rays." Note that we may still see one personnel change for Baltimore this weekend. Cornerback Chris Carr was deactivated last week, so the Ravens could have an extra defensive lineman in an effort to stop Houston's running game. Well, this time around, they're looking to stop the Patriots' passing game, so it would be Carr likely to be reactivated this week. Meanwhile, for New England, tight end slash running back Aaron Hernandez, and yes, have to list him as a running back now. He has 5 carries for 61 yards, gouging Denver's defense last week. He's passed his concussion tests and should be considered probable for Sunday's game. It'll be interesting to see if Bill Belichick continues to use him as a running back against Baltimore, or whether that was just a one-off deal from something he saw on film against the Denver Broncos defense.
Moving on to the NFC Championship game, it looks like the Giants are going to get a pretty clean bill of health. He had 2 issues coming out of the Green Bay win. Chris Canty, Victor Cruz, both guys look good to go. When we get to a post-mortem segment on Thursday, we break down that first Giants-San Francisco meeting. We know how much that clean bill of health means. In that earlier loss here at Candlestick, Justin Tuck played hurt. Osa Umenyura didn't play at all. Michael Boley, best linebacker in the Giant team, he spent the second half in street clothes. So we'll talk about that injury aspect. For the 49ers, not going to know until later in the week, about Ted Ginn. He's got both ankle and knee injuries. He cogged for their special teams. One thing they may get, though, that could be a bonus, Delanie Walker has been cleared to return to practice. He hasn't played since suffering a broken jaw at Seattle on Christmas Eve. They would love to have one more tight end in their rotation. The Giants get such good pass rushing off the edges. The ability to play 2 tight ends means you could have Walker as a good blocker on one end and send Vernon Davis out in pass patterns on the other. As the week goes by, we're going to watch Walker's status very closely.
Very closely. Let's talk about tonight's Warriors-Cavs game. Right now, Cleveland about a 2.5-point home favorite against Golden State, and there are injury issues on both sides for this one. Good news for the Warriors is that they are expected to have Monta Ellis able to go tonight. He missed part of Sunday's win at Detroit after suffering a minor knee injury. The bad news for Golden State is that they're not likely to have Stephon Curry back in the lineup this evening. They were targeting tonight's game for his return. Looks like a no-go for Curry. He did take part in practice yesterday, but with the back-to-back setting, Golden State plays at New Jersey tomorrow. We may see him tomorrow, not likely to see Curry tonight. After this trip, the Warriors only play 2 home games over their next 6 days, so they might give Curry both games off in an effort to give him ample time to heal. For Cleveland, their starting number 2, the shooting guard Anthony Parker, is going to be out after suffering a back injury early in yesterday's win at Charlotte. This will move Daniel Gibson, old Booby Gibson, back in the lineup, starting lineup for Cleveland. And Gibson's defense, instrumental in yesterday's win over Charlotte. Even though we took an 0-5 collar from the field, head coach Byron Scott, very complimentary of his defense performance in that contest, said it was one of the keys to the win. Of course, that defense could definitely matter against sharpshooter Monta Ellis tonight.
Okay, so if we're going to start shifting gears and trying to find spots to play over when the market sets the value a little bit too low, I'm going to look for personnel changes that can help us along the way. Look at the Bobcats. 2 games ago, Paul Silas had a team playing their third game in 3 nights. They looked tired. They looked out of sorts. They weren't playing all that well anyway. So he experiments a little bit. Kemba Walker and DJ Augustine in the backcourt at the same time. Two natural point guards, two guys a little bit small, going to go faster pace, going to be a little bit weaker on defense. It worked. They went on and they beat the Warriors. What didn't necessarily work from a winning standpoint yesterday, but now two consecutive overs have been played. Charlotte pushing the pace more on offense with this alignment and also much weaker on defense. Note that it's not just having two small guys at guard, but Gerald Henderson now moving and playing in the front court, Boris Diaw sitting out. That's an awfully small lineup. Note that even though yesterday's game just barely went over the total, when you read between the lines, some significant numbers to see. About 8 for 32 from three-point range and a 34 for 55 from the free throw line. It's almost like Dwight Howard came out and took all the free throws. When teams shoot the ball that poorly and still go over, tells you that maybe the markets don't have the number in the right place.
The first game for the Chicago Bulls without Derrick Rose this year was not much of a problem last week because they got to take on the aforementioned Washington Wizards, who are as inept as it gets at the NBA level right about now. But much different story yesterday for the Bulls without Rose. They fell down by 20 at halftime against Memphis, never really made a game of it, finished with 19 turnovers and only 12 assists. Now, John Lucas played so well in his starting debut against Washington last week. Yesterday, as a starter, he was awful. Now, note that C.J. Watson, who's been injured of late, he was healthy enough to get back in the rotation at 17 points and 3 assists over about 28 minutes of floor time. So who starts at number one tonight? Are we going to see Rose back in the lineup? Is it going to be Watson? Is it going to be Lucas? Well, they have Wednesday and Thursday off, so it could be an ideal time to sit Rose and allow the two backups to take on the point again. Of course, Chicago, about a 9-point favorite at home right now against the Phoenix Suns. But according to Rose, not up to head coach Tom Thibodeau what he wants to do. It's Derrick Rose's decision. Quote, "It's up to me if I want to go out there and play. It's my decision." We'll see what he decides to do.
Took the markets a long time to get that Chicago game up this morning because of Rose's status. Similar thing in Utah, where the Jazz are now a 4-point favorite over the Clippers. Issues on both sides for these teams. We expect Chris Paul to miss his second game in a row with a hamstring injury. Mo Williams likely to miss his third game in a row for an injured foot. Now, Randy Foy didn't shoot the ball well yesterday for the Clippers. It's only 6 for 17, but he did have 10 assists. But now here's the issue for Foy and for the entire Clipper team. They got to play back-to-back. They're saying, oh, that's no big deal. This is this new NBA cycle. It's only the second time all season that the Clippers have had to do that. Foy played over 40 minutes yesterday. That's a lot for a journeyman who's not accustomed to that load. Blake Griffin, 39-43. Caron Butler, 38-26. Chauncey Billups, DeAndre Jordan, also over 34 minutes. That could be a fairly big load for a team that's got to play at altitude tonight and just simply isn't accustomed yet, not only to not playing with each other. It's rare for this group to be out on the road, but also having that fatigue maybe play a little bit part. Helping them a little bit, though, Utah also a bit shorthanded. Derek Favors, Josh Howard, may both be sitting out tonight. No, they went to Denver and won by 10 anyway the other night with Howard not playing. Favors only playing 7 minutes. Tyrone Corbin has got a deep rotation of guys working pretty hard, almost like a poor man's Denver right now.
When we come back, it's time to break down the marquee matchups on the hardwoods in NBA and college. Money Time up next.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's raise the roof, y'all. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Miami, where tonight the Heat, about a 7-point favorite against the San Antonio Spurs, and maybe some soul-searching time for Miami, whether you want to spell that S-O-L-E or S-O-U-L. In the fourth quarter and overtime of their last three losses, they closed out the road trip on a three-game skid, outscored 95-65, an average of 10 points per game in crunch time with losses against the Warriors, the Clippers, and the Nuggets. Now, three decent teams, no question, but not the elite of the – well, maybe they are. Bottom line is Miami didn't play well during crunch time. Can they solve it here, Dave?
So it's not just soul as in the heart of the team, but it's soul as in Dwayne Wade's foot and ankle. We're not going to see him tonight. We might see him for a little while. We'll take this from Eric Spoelstra, referring to this. No new updates from him, no new timetable. He's moving around. He's able to condition on the bike. Every day I'll reevaluate, and we'll go from there. There is no timetable. Okay, that's tough losing Wade, but here's the upside. And again, we talked about some of the peculiarities of this NBA season. The Heat have had back-to-back practice days at home. Haven't had that all year. They have probably gotten as much practice time the last 2 days as they did in all of their training camp. So now there's this ability to work some new players into rotation instead of Wade. And also I think we might see Mike Miller on the court for the first time. So yeah, it hurts to lose Wade, but at least you do have the opportunity to get some practice time, to put a game plan together, and tonight maybe come out with a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. The issue will be not coming out strong early, but maintaining it late. Do they still know where they want to go with the basketball in the fourth quarter of a close game?
And meanwhile, we have to take a look at the San Antonio side of the equation. You know, the Spurs have played fairly well, certainly on the offensive end of the court, without Manu Ginobili. We're talking about 6-2 straight up in the eight games since Ginobili got hurt. But it's surely worth noting that they've been playing against somewhat lesser competition. They were favored in seven of those eight games. Now they have to step up in class on the road against a hungry and angry Miami team, even without D. Wade in the lineup. Now, it's also worth noting that San Antonio 0-2 straight up and against the spread on the road in a dog roll, non-competitive. Last time they tried it, a 108-96 loss at Oklahoma City. And don't be fooled by that final score. They trailed by as many as 25 in that ballgame and trailed by 22 entering the fourth quarter before some late scramble points. The reserves played hard for Greg Popovich, but the bottom line is they didn't cover the number, and they haven't yet covered the number in this role this season. Now, San Antonio, Popovich was going nuts talking about his team's defense, saying, we have a lot of work to do. I don't disagree with that. You look at the season, San Antonio is giving up nothing ridiculous when we talk about points per game, 95 points per game. But they're allowing close to 46% shooting in a year where shooting league-wide is way down. Last time I looked, they were like number 26 out of 30 NBA teams in defensive shooting percentage allowed. That's not what we're used to seeing out of San Antonio, and it doesn't necessarily bode well for their chances this evening.
Marquee matchup on tonight's College Board, according to Teddy's former town, Ann Arbor, Michigan, where Michigan State, the road team, right now a 1-point favorite over the Hulse Wolverines. Terrific market action on this game so far. Michigan State out there at -2 in some of the overnights yesterday. Swung all the way over to Michigan as a 1-point favorite today. Now back to Michigan State, the favorite. Big action on the total. Dropped from 32 down as low as 27.5. Now that total's going back up. So the books are going to have a good handle on it. Question is, what sort of handle are we going to have? The upstart Wolverines won both matchups last year, both here and on the road. That shows you that maybe that mental barrier has been broken, that John Beilein now has seen Tom Izzo, knows how to react, because it's a classic game of different styles. Michigan, the finesse team, perimeter-oriented. Michigan State, the power team inside. But the one difference Beilein has now, two young guys who are real playmakers. Tim Hardaway, Trey Burke, these guys can play in the latter stages of a close game. That's the sort of team we tend to look for.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the numbers from Hardaway and Burke. Hardaway averaging 15.7 points per game, 3.6 boards. He has 41 assists, only 31 turnovers. Burke, the Frosh, a guy who's had pretty big shoes to fill, considering his replacement playing for pay in the NBA right now. 14.3 points per game, 3.6 boards, and an 89-46 assist to turnover ratio. And again, this hasn't come exclusively against an opposing slate filled with pansies. Michigan stepped up a number of times in non-conference play, and they've stepped up so far here in conference play. Still a perfect 11-0 at Chrysler Arena so far this season. But, number one, Michigan State, and believe me, Tom Izzo takes this rivalry very, very seriously. It was his domination of Michigan early on in his tenure that set the stage for Izzo to get all the best recruits from the state and really help the Michigan program stay down for a good 10 years. This series is one that Izzo, you know, the fact that they got swept last year, it's a triple-circled game for Michigan State, and Michigan State's probably coming off their worst-played game maybe since the opener against North Carolina. You know, this is a team that was red hot for the better part of 2 months, and they kind of stumbled this past weekend at Northwestern. Didn't play well, particularly on the defensive end of the court. The Wildcats have given Michigan State trouble in seasons past. They're very precise offense is something that the Spartans have had difficulty matching up against. And guess what? Michigan has a pretty precise offense as well.
You're going to see a lot of similarities. Good ball movement, players moving without the ball, makes some tough chasing for Michigan State. But you know that Izzo spent a big part of the offseason focusing on that Michigan playbook. Again, it does bother him to have lost those games. But it's just not that easy anymore. Michigan a little bigger inside than in the past. They're actually winning the rebounding battles in the Big Ten. And here's something we really like in terms of the pendulums of sport. They're 4-10 in conference play. In those six games, you look at Hardaway, Burke, and Zach Novak. Their three best shooters, 23-88 from three-point range. It's nice to shoot that poorly and still be able to win. Where's the Michigan problem, though? Depth. John Horford not ready to go yet tonight. They're basically down to a six-man rotation. That's tough when you go up against the physical style Michigan State brings. And State, once again, very physical. Plus 8 rebounds per game in Big Ten play. Draymond Green possibly playing his way up to like first-team All-American status, averaging a double-double, 15.8 points, 10.1 rebounds. But the shocking thing about Green, who's got that prototype power-forward body, 24-59 from three-point range. That's over 40%. In Big Ten play, 11-17. He's been shooting the lights out. That's an added element that Michigan State needs. Part of why they need it, though, the guards, outside of Appling, not quite as good. If this line drifts back to that plus two, we'll get some Michigan in our pockets. But even at plus one, they're putting a little more past reputation instead of current reality there. We can take a little Michigan for our pockets at this price. But somewhere a little bit better, we can go on this board.
Oh, yeah. I think that, because for me, this game is a clear pass. I want, you know, we take plus five on either side, which we're not going to get me to the window for Michigan State. Great game to watch. Not necessarily a great game for me, personally, to wager on. However, it's not about watching. It's about winning. And I think we've got a good one in the NBA ranks tonight. We're going to go back to something we talked about in our Insider Six-Pack, about the L.A. Clippers not having played these back-to-back settings on the road so far this season, about the Clips with injury concerns without both Chris Paul and Mo Williams this evening, and with the Utah Jazz all of a sudden putting together a pretty strong point spread streak of their own. Yeah, let's lay it with Utah tonight. The Vegas Sports Day play of the day, Utah Jazz, -4 against the L.A. Clippers this evening. That's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday show. Thank you so much, really, thank you, for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck. We'll see you again mañana.